So hello everyone, my name is Florian. I work at Scaleway and I'm an engineering manager, software developer there, and today we'll talk about how we use servers to handle our production workload, just like if they were containers. So a quick slide of context, Scaleway is a European cloud provider. We do a lot of tests, data centers, shared collocation, shared hosting, whatever, instances, databases. We have physical locations in France, Amsterdam, and in Poland. And I work in the storage team, as I said. We are a team of 10 people. We handle pretty much everything storage-ish related. At Scaleway, so being the block and object storage products, and also some older systems like the ERP InSAN and the data backup in the online ecosystem. And we have around 1,000 servers in production and more than 100 petabytes of storage. So when I joined the team 5 years ago, the infra was what it was. It grown over organically over the years, and versions were all over the places. Everything was a bit custom for the team needs at the time. So some servers were locally installed, some were PXC booting, but everything was not homogeneous. And we had an old Perl-based automation system that suffered a lot because not so much people had fluency in Perl, so it was pretty much a huge happen-only script that did stuff. So we wanted to start something fresh, something new, something we could work on for a few years. So we started considering stuff. Everybody at the time started to use containers, but we were not a fan because at that time they were not as mature, the tooling and ecosystem was not that great, and also we wanted to try something different. We still use containers for development purposes, CI and whatever, but we decided to do PXC Live Booting. It comes with some great advantages. First of all, you just plug a server to the network. You boot your discovery image and you're pretty much set up, nothing else to do. Reboot is just like taking down a container to update it. And it's, well, when you have thousands of servers in production, a reboot is not that big of a deal, it's just life. The only downside is that you need to have a solid network and working the HTTP. As a cloud provider, you don't have network, don't do anything, so not really a downside. So let's talk about automation. After using the Perl stuff, we started on Salt. It worked okay, but it was really hard to test modifications before putting them in production. And at the time, it was nobody's job, pretty much. Like, no one had clear in-house responsibility for it. So it was not that well maintained. So one day, we decided to move to Ansible, mostly because everyone else at the time was moving to Ansible in the company. So we wanted to share our efforts and small libraries so that everybody can like do stuff cleaner and not have something where everyone does things on the side. It's easier to write, easier to test. The learning curve is not as steep as with Salt. And you don't have a central controller that has to be maintained by a certain team. You just can keep that in-house. But ultimately, we wrote something along the lines of a controller, but some really dumb stuff around 250 lines of Go for the server, and just a shy of 100 for the client, which is written in Python. It's pretty dumb, just an API that when a server boots, it calls it the API. Okay, here you are. Here's your configuration. Just to have something a bit cleaner that works well with PXC images, we have split up the automation in two parts. We have one part that are the deploy playbooks. Their only job in the life is to install and update all the software stack, and that's pretty much it. And afterwards, we have the runtime playbooks, which job is to set up networking, because basically when you boot it in the live boot, you just have the basic one interface, the DHCP address, and you need some network configuration to make your service work. It assembles the RAIDs, mounts file system, tunes the OS like sysctls, separate governor or whatever, and afterwards it just configures and starts your services. One quick note, the install playbooks are run on production server and during image creations, and some are there just to remove default packages that we do not want to have in the built image. Now just a little bit about how we handle pixel image creations. Basically, a pixel image is a SquashFS that you download over the internet just after having booted your kernel. It literally a rootfest of your server, but inside the RAM. The first ways that were used before I arrived was just a snapshot of the rootfs of a VM. Afterwards, there were docker to pixie.pl, basically a huge Perl script that was extracting the file system of a container. It came with some limitations because basically the way that base image of containers are made make that they are not a fully functional OS. Afterward, we use Ashcom Packer, and now we use a small trick with SSHD and Ansible SSH port that basically traps the Ansible execution inside a shroot on the build server. The huge advantage of this is that the same playbooks for the deployments of software are used for both the creation of the image and updating servers and productions. And the build system is based on a Ubuntu server image, nothing fancy. And we are using the default Liveboot Initramfs package that comes up with Debian and Ubuntu, with a few tweaks to allow for retries and to avoid boot storms. Like you have 30 or 50 servers that reboot at the same time that do not fetch the SquashFS on the same machines to avoid any networking issues. Here's the fun part. There is a small playbook that's called pixelmagic.yaml that handles a lot of stuff that's caused because the Ubuntu default packages are not all meant to be run inside a Liveboot environment. First, we avoid triggering the package triggers during kernel install because it saves a lot of time during the creation of an image. But afterwards, you have to rebuild all the DKMS and custom kernel modules to specifically target the kernel version that is inside the shroot, because it's not the same as the host, necessarily. All the HapArmor profiles are to be patched, because they limit what software can access which files. But as you are running from RAM, you have some kind of overlay FS above it. So HapArmor thinks that NTP, for example, is not targeting the NTP drift file in slash var, but in somewhere like var, lib, live, medium, something, overlay.fs. So you have to patch all those. Here's the flag. Took just like 2 weeks to find in an old mailing list of the kernel, like 2.4 or something. You have to add support for the overlay.fs so you don't break the default emotid before configuration. And as the system is amnesiac after each reboot, you have to take into account that we do not use any network configuration utility, so no netplan, no systemd, networkd, no if up down, nothing. So you have to take that into account because some symlinks are broken by default. So we've been doing that for 5 years, and well, pretty much nothing to say, just works. We have the convenience of containers, so we have all the systems into production that are pretty much homogeneous with pretty much the same version everywhere. And we have the comfort of using just plain bare metal servers without having any issues. Like a long time ago when you updated Docker, it had the bad habits of restarting every container on the host without asking you anything. We scaled from 100 servers to 1,000 with only pretty much 3 to 4 people handling deployment and installation of servers. And new servers are deployed quite fast, like it takes like 1 hour to deploy 10 new servers maximum, because you just have to collect the max, update the DHCP, and boot the machines, and it just works. And if you want to update anything, you just have to reboot. It's pretty simple. I think I spoke too big fast. Does anyone have questions? Yes?
Does that mean that the operating system is basically never written to disk on the client?
Excuse me?
Does that essentially mean that you have disk-less servers there?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So the only data that is written on physical disk are the... Oh, the question. He was saying that we did not install pretty much the servers, that there was no OS installed on servers, and yes, we do not have, we have a few ones, like the one that handles the images distribution, the DHCP, and so on, but every other service inside our infrastructure is diskless for the OS part, because we do have data from clients, and we do not tend to store that in memory. But that's pretty much it. Every disk is used for clients. Yes?
Did you consider using live build for building your images instead of Packer?
So the question was, did we consider using live build from Packer? We did use that, but at the time we were running on public virtual machines, and the building of images was pretty slow. So we moved to this solution using Shroot and a big ass build server, and just really, really fast. So that's why we use that now. Yes?
By swapping out salt master, that means that now Ansible needs to be run like ad hoc. What kind of automation do you have on top of that? Because having to run Ansible every time from your laptop.
Yeah. So the playbooks are run at boot time on the servers. Basically, on every server, you have a small client written in Python that's like 80 lines, but pretty much half of it is commentaries. And it just call an API saying, hey, my IP is that, can you deploy me? And we have multiple services in everywhere that just have a copy of all the deployment files and the configuration files. And it's a reverse Ansible deployment from a server inside the, so you don't have any human interaction to redeploy a server. Any other questions? So thanks for your time.